page in the these books, it's page 82, like in the beginning. But it's funny, it's like funny lettering because it's page like Mem Aleph, but on the other side it's 82. The Hebrew page are each, the two sides each. Okay, so after a bit of a pause, we back to Tanya. And we're going to start with Perek Lamed Gimel, which is chapter 33. So we need a bit of a context here and a bit of a review. So let's try and give that a synopsis. So I want to take you back to chapter 26. Essentially, 26 to, because Tanya works in sections, so one of the sections of Tanya was chapter 26 to chapter 31, Lamed Aleph, before we got to 32. And there the Alter Rebbe spoke about the struggle between the Nefesh HaBamis and the Nefesh HaLakis, and how it can sometimes weigh you down and it can bring you sadness, and the Alter Rebbe started to address that because obviously sadness and heaviness would be something that would be counterproductive to serving Hashem, because like as explains over there, someone who's heavy and low and depressed and whatever cannot overcome an enemy. Only someone who's strong, enthusiastic, and simple. So he went through a couple of chapters in different angles, and if you remember that the because on the other hand we have to have a certain amount of not sadness or guilt or bitterness, whatever you want to call it. You have to have discomfort about the things we've done wrong. He spoke about different sources of sadness. Is it our physical needs that are not being met? In which case, he talked about the recognizing the hidden love from Hashem, that sometimes those uncomfortable things come from even a higher source. And then when he talked about things of avodas Hashem and serving Hashem, he also spoke about the idea that you need to designate times to feel upset about the avodas that we do, but then you have to get rid of that and replace it with tremendous simcha that Hashem will forgive us, and so on and so forth. Right? That would take long. Now, in the process of those chapters, he spoke about the concept of timtum halev. Timtum halev was the concept that even when we apply all the strategies of Tanya and we answer the question of how Hashem is really close to us, ki karov lecha dover moed, because we have the love of Hashem that we can conjure up in our emotions and through the brain, and the brain rules the heart, and if we can't do it emotionally, we can at least do it intellectually, and if that doesn't work, we can at least go, this is each one I'm saying now is a separate section, right? We can at least go through the whole concept of discovering the hidden love that we all have to Hashem, the chachma of the nefesh, the mesiras nefesh, and so on and so forth. But sometimes it just doesn't work, it just doesn't take light. So he says that's got to do with the concept of timtum halev, or timtum hamoyach, he said, the blockages of the heart, the blockages of the brain, and he went into a whole thing about the mushal, the analogy from the Zohar thing, that if a large plank of wood won't catch light, you have to bash it up, right? You have to splinter it into different parts. And so too, he did go through a part which like temporarily almost seemed like it was the opposite of simcha, where you have to go through a part of actually confronting and really splintering the clipper, right? To unblock the blockage. And that takes a whole bunch of different things. It takes reflection of how low the Nefesh HaBamis is, even before it does something wrong, and especially after it does something wrong, and that we were born, and the clipper that we have, and we just have to penetrate that and to really smash it so that we give room for the Neshama to resurface and to connect to the Neshama, right? And that was pretty tough. We learned that. And he says over there that you need to do that because apart from very great people, we have to realize that our consciousness, in other words, who are we, when we ask the question, who are we, in a conscious way, we actually are the Nefesh HaBamis, right? Only people like Hillel, I don't know if you remember this, only people like Hillel were able to say, when they went to eat, they were able to say, we're going to do kindness with the poor one, because his identity, his real identity, even his conscious identity, was Nefesh HaLakis, right? And we're not like that, but us, it's the Nefesh HaBamis, which only gets worse from time, because we eat and we sleep and all this kind of stuff. And then he poses the question towards the end, before the end of chapter Lamed Aleph 31. He says, doing all that is really important to penetrate the clipper and allow the neshama to take light and to catch fire. But then this, all of this will bring to the opposite of simcha. I mean, like it's a really tough reflection, right? I mean, it's part of Tanya, and it's something that Tanya wants us to do from time to time, but how do we do that without falling into some sort of despair or depression or right? And he ended up by saying, and he gave this idea of how you get to simcha, right? And the simcha was by understanding that at the end of the day, even though consciously, he said, we are the Nefesh HaBamis, but nevertheless, in truth, we're not. The pnimius, the inner essence of every yid is the neshama. We might not be Hillel, although we might not be in a conscious way. So it depends what we're talking about. If we're talking about how we operate consciously on the surface, we have to recognize that we are operating on the Nefesh HaBamis, therefore we have to confront it. But if you want to know who we really are, we are the neshama. The pnimius of the yid is the neshama, right? Which is infinitely greater and infinitely closer to a Hashem and infinitely more important than the Nefesh HaBamis or the Guf and the body, right? In other words, the real essence of who we are is not bad. The real essence of who we are is good. The real essence of who we are is close to Hashem. The real essence of who we are is never really lost its purity, right? The essence of the Neshama, in other words, right? And when we understand that the Guftak is a shtickle garbage, but the neshama is infinitely greater, and the neshama is really who we are, and the neshama is really the thing we should be focusing on anyways. In other words, the journey of a yid is to really not focus on the body, not focus on the physicality. We have to bring Hashem into the physical, but who we are, in terms of our identity, our whole primary focus should be on being God-centered, neshama-centered, and really making the neshama the most important force of our lives. Then we come to simcha. Yes, we've bashed up the Nefesh HaBamis a little bit so we can allow it to catch light and allow the neshama to burn with love of Hashem. But it doesn't send us into a sadness, because that's not the main part of who we are. That's just a secondary part of who we are. The main part of who we are is the neshama, and the pnimius, really, in essence, the neshama is still fine and still focused and still there and still pure, and it's really who we are. Okay. That was Perek Lamed Aleph, right? Okay. Then came Perek Lamed Beis, the 32nd chapter of Tanya, which is kind of a standalone, but not really a standalone. Okay. And he said like this, that when we apply this principle, in order to achieve simcha, right? In order not to be sad, we apply the principle as, I'll quote the words of the beginning of Lamed Beis, right? He says, when you fulfill these things, that gufa, your body, is nivzev and nimas bein, it's like secondary, it's like degraded in your eyes. But your real simcha is the simchas hanefesh, it's the simcha of the neshama, right? When you do that, he says, what I just talked about in chapter 31, when you can do that properly, you will come to another thing, another benefit, which is be able to fulfill the mitzvah of a haftol re'acha kamecha, loving another yid like yourself, right? And that was the whole, and it's a very famous chapter, it's known as the heart of Tanya, because it's Perek Lamed Beis is Lev, right? And you're able to come. Why? Because if our focus of our being and our existence is our body, within the body there's division. My body's not the same as your body. My Nefesh HaBamis is different to your Nefesh HaBamis, right? And therefore we tend to clash. But when we change our whole life to the focus of the Neshama, the Neshama is the focus of my life, and it should be the focus of my life, and it should guide everything we do, including the secondary Nefesh HaBamis, then we're really equal. And he talked about different levels of being equal, brothers, but really in our source, we're not even brothers, we're completely one. And therefore we come to this idea of Avas Yisrael, right? Okay. The Rebbe explains that's not just look at the Tanya down there, sorry. The bottom shelf, there's a... It's okay, sorry. Right? Yeah, that's it. It's Perek Lamed Beis. The Rebbe explains not just a by-the-way point. In other words, the way you learn Tanya, it looks like 32 is like a standalone. It's like nothing to do with what he said before. Before he was talking about how you just have to pick the neshama and all that kind of stuff, right? And how you come to simcha. And this is just a standalone thing that you can come to Avas Yisrael as well, right? But the Rebbe explains not like that. It's actually a part of Tanya. In other words, knowing what he talked in Perek Lamed Aleph, knowing that choosing the neshama as the primary force and understanding that our essence is really the neshama even we're not conscious of it, and that's the real essence of who we are, and its purity and its kedusha and so on, will bring to simcha an additional layer of it causing simcha, is knowing that through that you can fulfill the mitzvah of a ahavta l'reicha kamocha. So, in other words, it's all part of another strategy, so to speak, to come to simcha. It wasn't just a standalone thing. That, by the way, this can also lead to ahavta l'reicha kamocha, knowing that this could bring to connection and unity and love between yidden. That itself should bring more simcha, knowing that that will lead to it. So therefore, it's not just a standalone; it's actually a part of the strategy. Okay. Now we come to Perek Lamed Gimel. It says like this, and Alter Rebbe now gives a new strategy to achieve simcha. Now we're not going to get to that today because he says in order to achieve the simcha, you have to reflect on something, which that something is going to take time for us to understand. Then we'll understand. Next week, we'll hopefully get to how that relates to the concept of simcha, right? So he says like this. Oy zois, perek lamed gimel. Oy zois tiye simchas hanefesh amitis. Another way you can achieve that there should be real simcha of your neshama, or be frat, especially kesheroye benafshoy, when we see sometimes in our neshama, in our being, in our experience, be'itim mezumonim, sometimes, from time to time, we all need we feel ourselves falling behind, we feel ourselves sort of slipping again, and we see the need, we have to really refine and to illuminate our neshama and our being, simchas levav, right? That you need more simcha. So how do you do that? It says like this. Yamik azai, yamik machshavtoi. You have to deepen your thought. The yitzair besichloi, and imagine in your intellect, will be nosen in your understanding, explore the concept of inyan yichuda yisbarech ha'amiti, the true oneness of Hashem. Now, let's just stop there for a second. He doesn't say yet how understanding the oneness of Hashem will lead to simcha. He just says you need to do that, right? Now, just understand, we have this concept already. I mean, we've mentioned the oneness of Hashem many times. We had it in Perek 20 and 21, Chof and Chof Aleph, but Alter Rebbe spent a lot of time on understanding how the world is truly part of Hashem's existence, and the world in itself really doesn't exist as an independent being, but exists. Yeah. So it'll be a bit of revision. It'll be in a different context, but we'll revisit that. But just to mention, we've mentioned this before, and many people, I think, miss this sometimes. The Mittler Rebbe writes that the essence of Chassidus, the essence of what the Alter Rebbe wanted with Chassidus, is to understand Achdus Hashem, the oneness of Hashem, meaning Hashem Echad. What does it really mean that Hashem is one, right? In fact, the Alter Rebbe wrote a whole section of Tanya on it. So it comes up a lot in Chof and Chof Aleph. It comes up now in this Perek. But really, the Alter Rebbe wrote, after the first section of Tanya, he wrote a whole section of Tanya called Shara Yichud Ve'emunah, the Gate of Oneness and Faith, which really deals with this extensively and with great detail, from a different angle a bit, or similar concepts, but different concepts. And when the Alter Rebbe wrote Shara Yichud Ve'emunah, he actually wrote it as part one of Tanya, right? Part one. Then he decided he's going to go with part two as part one, which is what we're learning now, the Kutei Amarim. Part of the reason is because really what it is like this, Shara Yichud Ve'emunah is the oneness of Hashem. The Kutei Amarim is how to apply the oneness of Hashem in terms of our struggle with the Nefesh HaBamis, right? How we overcome, how the Neshama overcomes. In other words, understanding Achdus Hashem really helps us, like the Alter Rebbe explained briefly, or sort of briefly, in 20 and 21, right? But you still have to write this first to go to the practical, to talk about the two neshamas and how we have to overcome the struggle between the Nefesh HaKis and the Nefesh HaBamis and so on, right? So much so that there's a hint to this. There's one part in the introduction of the next Shara Yichud Ve'emunah. It says over there, the Alter Rebbe mentions the concept, and he says, Kasher yisbo'er, like it will be explained. And he left it there like that, right? And it's not explained in Shara Yichud Ve'emunah, it's explained in this part of Tanya. Because it's supposed to come after Shara Yichud Ve'emunah, and that's what he meant, Kasher yisbo'er, as it will be explained. And when the Alter Rebbe decided to put this first, he didn't change the grammar, he left it there on purpose. I guess to hint to the fact that although he put it second, but to a certain degree it's first. Understand? And it's first because that is the chiddush, that is one of the great chiddushim of the Alter Rebbe, based on the Baal Shem Tov actually, right? That the idea of Hashem Echad is not that there's only one God to the exclusion of other gods, that's simple, right? That's what people think Hashem Echad means, which obviously does, but not only, right? I think I told you once, I went from Rangeit Chassid, Reb Zalman Serebransky in Melbourne, who now I refer to him as my son-in-law's grandfather, great-grandfather, right? Chanan married a right chick who's married to a Serebransky, yeah. But I was a bacher, he was an old chassid in Melbourne, he said, the chassidim used to say, why is there a big dalad in the word echad? If you look up a mezuzah or tefillin or sefer Torah, you see that Hashem echad has a big dalad. It's called dalad rabosi, right? And there's all sorts of reasons for it in Sefer, but, you know, pikabola, pechsilis, but he says, chassidim used to say that the dalad is big because it's shaped like an axe. In Yiddish it sounds better. He says, "Val medafar rein hacken dem echad in kop." Says because you got to knock the echad into your head. Now, what do you have to knock into your head? What Hashem echad? What's so difficult to understand? What is one God? What Yoshke is not correct? I mean, what? You don't need to say Shema five times a day for that, right? And you don't certainly don't have to hack that into your head. But of course, there is a deeper meaning of Hashem echad. Not just that He's one God, but He's the source of everything. He's the only source of everything that we have. Right, that's like another thing. For example, the Gemara says that you have to understand we don't accomplish anything. In other words, when the Gemara says, I think it's in Shabbos or quoted in Shabbos or Brochus maybe, when you go and plow a field, so the way a Yid does is he plows a field and then he maimin b'chai oil, and then he believes in Hashem, it's going to grow. Why? Because he knows that his plowing has nothing to do with it. You got to plow, you got to make the keli, that's what Hashem wants, but really it's completely up to Hashem. It's nothing to do with my skill as a farmer, right? Okay. That's another pshat Hashem Echad, a deeper level. The Baal Shem Tov came, elaborated by the Alter Rebbe in Tanya, and subsequently, really, this is the essence of Chassidus. Not that He's one God, not that He's the source of everything, but He's the only real Metzius, He's the only real entity, He's the only thing that exists, truly. So maybe I should do this. Let me just give you a little bit of a snippet of something Alter Rebbe says in Sha'arichud V'Emunah that leads into what he's saying here. One of the things Alter Rebbe starts with Sha'arichud V'Emunah, just so I can explain a little bit, right? Sha'arichud V'Emunah, the Alter Rebbe explains, to explain this concept that the world doesn't really truly exist as an independent entity, explains the following. That, in this he quotes from Baal Shem Tov, that when Hashem said the 10 ma'amoras, the 10 sayings of creation, right? It's not the pshat that Hashem said, let there be a heaven, and then He left it alone, and it's a heaven now, since then. Or let there be a tree, or let there be this, right? But the Baal Shem Tov said that the energy, the godly energy that is in the words that Hashem communicated, the creative power that's in Hashem's words to create, has to be in the heaven every single moment. And the only reason that it exists is because that creative power is continuously creating the world. Were that creative power, were that spark of Hashem's creative power to for one moment to leave the creation, it would return to nothingness. Not just return to nothingness, but it would be a nothingness as if it was never created. We'll go back to before the 6 days of creation. Right? Explains why. I'm going to be a very just short synopsis of this. Why? Because the mashal, he brings is a smith, right? A smith that takes a piece of silver and he turns it into a candelabra. Doesn't have to keep turning it into a candelabra. Why? Because the candelabra is already there, right? Not only is the candelabra already there, sorry, not the candelabra is already, I mean the silver is already there, right? And the silver already has the potential of being reshaped and becoming a candelabra, right? But when it comes to the world, the whole existence of the world is a chiddush. In other words, it's Hashem created something that was never there. And therefore, because it goes against the default position, which the default position was before the world was created, nothing exists other than the presence of Hashem. So therefore, that new existence has to be propped up the entire time. Right? Now, one of the physical analogies that's brought for this is like this. When you take a stone, right? So the default in this world, When you take a stone, the default characteristic of a stone is that gravity will pull it down, correct? So if you knock, if you push a stone over a mountain, it will fall. And it will continue falling, right? It will continue falling ad infinitum, were it not for the ground that's on the bottom, it will keep going, right? You see what I'm saying? It will just keep going forever, because that's what it does. On the other hand, if you take a stone and you throw it upwards, right, it will continue to fly upwards as long as the force that's propping it up is there, right? Yeah, this is like a basic scientific thing, right? I mean, I wasn't very good at science in school, so but a little bit I remember, right? So as soon as that force that you put into the stone stops, it automatically falls down. Okay. But what that does is that mashal gives us a little bit of an insight into the concept of the oneness of Hashem, because we always have this problem, right? When we say the world doesn't really exist, what does it mean? It doesn't exist? Imagination? Of course not. It says in the Torah that the world exists. Bereishis bara Elokim. In the beginning, Hashem created the world. Right? We're not some imagination. And Hashem gave us Torah mitzvahs, right? He gave us Torah for a reason, to elevate the physical. No, what does it mean, right? So this mashal of the stone is a very good mashal. Why? Because a bird, for example, naturally flies, correct? Doesn't need an outside force to prop it up. That's what it is. That's its characteristic. So when you look at a bird flying, is it correct to say it's a flying bird? And it says, yes, it's a flying bird, right? However, the stone, when you throw it up, and it's flying against its nature, right? So there's two questions you have to ask. Is the stone flying? Yes. Is it a flying stone? No. Why not? If it's flying, then why isn't it a flying stone? Because its flying has nothing to do with it. Its flying is a manifestation of the force that you put into it. Yeah, you following me? It's a very important idea, this. Same thing with the world. Does the world exist? Yes. Is it an existing world? No. Because the world doesn't really exist. The world is just a manifestation of the godly creative power that's in the table. So is the table existing independently? No. The table is completely bottle to Hashem, it's completely nothingness to Hashem, because really part of Hashem's existence. Yeah? That's just to a little bit to reconcile the concept of because our existence is actually very important. It's important because we do Torah mitzvahs, right? like a hand is very important, right? Without the hand, you can't give tzedakah, you can't light a Shabbos candle, you can't put on tefillin, right? So obviously it's important. But its importance is the mitzvah, because everything is really Hashem. So the whole, right? But, and this is very relevant to the way we serve Hashem, right? Because like this is a famous thing, chassidus, right? We say like this. A person does a mitzvah with a hand. You give tzedakah with your hand. You light a Shabbos candle with your hand. So what's the pshat? Pshat is you have a hand. And Hashem told you, you know what you should do with your hand? You should give tzedakah. You should light a Shabbos candle, right? That's not correct. The truth is the other way around. There's no hand. The whole existence of the hand is to give tzedakah and light a Shabbos candle. Or to help someone else. Is that? But it's connected to this concept of oneness of Hashem, because everything's about Hashem. Everything's really just an expression of Hashem's existence. Okay. So he says you have to go, and we're going to take it one step further, because we'll talk about that in a second. And we'll explain why that's later. We'll explain next week. We'll go into why this reflection is so connected to building up simcha. Because it's counterintuitive a little bit. We might, like, knowing that we don't really exist, why does that foster simcha? You follow? On the contrary, it makes us nothing. So it makes us just one big shtick of nothingness, right? But we'll see why it actually brings the greatest simcha. But we'll see next week. But let's learn what this is. He says like this. Again. He says, Yamik machshavto, you have to deepen your thought. Yitzar b'sichloi, and really form in your brain. Binosin, your understanding. Inyan yichudoi yisbarach amiti, the oneness of Hashem, the true oneness of Hashem. Then he says, what do I mean by the true oneness of Hashem? And he says three things. Eichu memalei kol alim el yonim v'tachtonim. How Hashem fills the worlds upper worlds and lower worlds, full of the presence of Hashem. Then he says, "Afilu meloikol ha'aretz alazu hu kvoido yisbarach." And really, the entire world is filled with the glory of Hashem, which sounds like just the first thing, but it's not. We'll see in a second. And the third thing is, "V'kula kamei kalo choshiv mamish." Everything that exists in front of Hashem, in the face of Hashem, it is considered absolute nothingness. So the Rebbe explains, and in different places, Chassidus explains, what is Alter Rebbe saying? He's saying three things. What is he saying? What are those three things? So, very bekitzer, because I don't want to go too much into it, because it's not so really relevant to the flow of the conversation here, but we know that in Chassidus, it says like this. There's two things, famous concept of Chassidus, we've talked about it before. There's Memaleh Kol Almin and Soivev Kol Almin. There's the way Hashem, literally translated, there's the way Hashem fills the world, and there's the way Hashem encompasses the world. It doesn't actually mean that, which I'll explain. Memaleh Kol Almin means the power of Hashem that interacts with the creation. Right? And it interacts with every creation according to its level. Right? For example, like in our own body, we always go back to the moshul of our own existence. The soul power that's in the brain is very different to the soul power that's in the foot. Why? Because right, every part of our body is a keli, is a vessel for some other faculty. So our eyes, the brain is a keli to understand, the eyes is a keli to see, the foot's a keli to walk, yeah? But the power of walking cannot be compared to the power of thinking. So how does it work? Hashem sends, the neshama has these different powers. So different expressions of the neshama, the ability to see, the ability to think, the ability to understand, to hear, to talk, to walk, to write, to touch, right? And the way a physical person works, that those powers of the neshama have to come into the keli of the neshama, right? Of the keli of the guf, I mean. The vessel of the guf. So the power of thinking can never come into the foot because the foot's not a refined enough vessel for the power of thinking. The brain is. The eyes are keli for the power of seeing, right? The foot is lower, so it's, there's a lower power that's in the foot, a lower faculty that's in the foot, right? So if the foot can walk or kick, the hands can touch or write, it's a bit more complicated. So there are different keli on different levels, and each keli, it's the same thing with Hashem. The creative power that Hashem puts into the different parts of the world, depending on how high the world or low the world is. And even within the world, we know that even if you look at the world, there's more life force in a person than there is in a stone, right? And that's all the neshama, that's all Hashem's creative force, because it goes according to each thing on its own. That's one thing. But then, there's something called Soivev Kol Almin, right? Soivev Kol Almin means how Hashem is higher than the world, transcends the world, not felt in the world altogether. In other words, like this. The part of Hashem's relationship with the world that we can relate to is Memaleh Kol Almin. It's the part we can understand that we feel alive, so we feel that life must be in a shoma. We feel that the trees are higher than the stones, the animals are more alive than the trees. All these things we can sort of have some sort of relation, we understand it because it sort of makes sense, right? Then there's Hashem, how he transcends the world, and it's higher than understanding, right? And that part, it says, is in everywhere completely equally. What does that mean? It's, Al-Tabba says later, it's not like he's outside the world, he's in the world, but in a way of makif, it's like all-encompassing. He's not interacting with the world. I've given you the mashal before, like a crowd can go into a lecture of an unbelievable, brilliant mind that came up from overseas, and it gives this unbelievable lecture, which is breathtaking and unbelievable, and most people have no clue what he was talking about. But they were there, they heard it, but it's there, but they're not there. They don't understand it, because it's beyond them, right? And you can have people at different levels of understanding, but in comparison to that person, they were all blown away. Wow, like there's a wow and everyone comes up. What did he say? No idea. Right? Because I don't understand that. I don't internalize it. It's just the power of it was unbelievable. Where do we have that again within our own experience? It's the idea what we call rotzon. Rotzon. We explained this once before. You asked for a revision, so it's a good opportunity. rotzon, the idea of will. Will is one of the most strongest powers of the person. Actually, it influences everything else. It influences the way we think, the way we feel. Right? But can you pinpoint somewhere in the body where Rotzon lives? According to Chassidus, you can't. It's everywhere equally. Because why? It doesn't have a keli. Rotzon is not felt in a... Like I can't say, this is the organ of Rotzon. No. I can say this is the organ of touching. I can say this is the place where I understand, right? But Ratzon Yikar, because it's a higher. It's everywhere, but it's not interacting with everywhere. It remote controls drives it, right? So that's a Sovev Galami. Now, when we say that Sovev Galami is transcendent, and we talked about this thing a number of months ago. Oh yeah, I know which one. It was the Maimer of Pesach, right? When I say it transcends the world, it means it still gives the world some importance. It's higher than the world. When I say something is higher than something, it means that this, we're comparing two things. One's higher than the other, but it's still compared, right? Like I told you, for example, you can't say about... someone came with a brilliant concept, right? So you can say, this is the most brilliant idea I've ever heard, and it's infinitely greater than the stupidity I heard yesterday, right? That will make sense, that sentence, correct? Why? Because someone who told me an unbelievably stupid thing yesterday still had an attempt on understanding something, just got it all wrong, and it was completely stupid. Suddenly today, the contrast, I mean, it's unbelievable, this guy's unbelievably brilliant, right? In other words, you still compare it, but they still have a connection. They have no connection, but by reverse connection they have. They're like, it's a negative connection. This idea, compared to this idea, is like unbelievably stupid, right? So they have no connection, but they have a connection by comparing them negatively. You know what I'm saying?
Relatable.
Right?
They're relatable
on some level, right? If I said about a seichel, always they say this, Moshe Lechassid, this Tanya brings it. If I say, you know, that idea was so unbelievably great, it was so brilliant, that you can't even touch it. Now that's just like, that just doesn't make sense. Because touching is not in the world of intellect altogether. You can't describe the greatness of an idea by the fact that you can't touch it. You can understand the greatness of an idea, the fact that it's infinitely greater than something else, some other stupid idea. You follow what I'm saying? Right? Oh. So, therefore, even we say, so like this, Mamale kol Alma, the way Hashem interacts with the world, it's through the concept of tzimtzum that Hashem is kind of giving room for a world, is giving room for existence. The fact that he's interacting with it and he's allowing the tree to exist and the person to exist and this world to exist and Briya, Yetzirah, all these worlds to exist at each one at their level means he's giving room for existence, right? Which he created, but he's giving room for existence that it feels like something that exists. But even Soivav Kol Alme, even the Hashem's transcendent, which is Makif around the world, is infinitely greater than the world and sort of makes the world much more insignificant, but still relatable because he's saying it encompasses the world. So you're giving room for the world. So we say there's a third level. And the third level is the essence of Hashem. Atzmus of Hashem. There's Malei Kol Alamin, there's Soivav Kol Alamin, and then there's the essence of Hashem. The essence of Hashem is so undefined and so infinite that we don't even know what it is. We can't say it's higher than the world. We can't say it's not higher than the world because there's no relationship. Now the world doesn't even exist at that point. So that's what the three things the Alter Rebbe is saying here. You have to reflect on the oneness of the world. Let's put it inside. How he fills the world, the upper worlds and the lower worlds. Meaning, we talk about Mamalek Almin. There's upper worlds and there's lower worlds. Then he says, and then even how the whole world is filled with the glory of Hashem. He's talking about Sovev Kol Alamin. Because the whole world equally. He's not talking about any more up and down. They're all equal because he's greater than all of it. But he's greater than all of it, so there's still a relationship. And he goes to the third thing, V'kulei kamei kolochoshim. And everything is considered nothing in the face of Hashem. That's the essence of Hashem. Really, the world doesn't exist. The world is nothing. When I say the world is nothing, I'm always reminded of my father-in-law used to talk about this a lot. This is his big thing. Chassidus always talk about this, and he'd try to bring about it. So my parents-in-law had a couple that were very, very good friends in Morristown. When they moved there, my mother-in-law met this lady, and then she became an unbelievable friend, Mrs. Mandel, she was. And they became a little bit close to Yiddishkeit, but they were still not, they weren't observant, they weren't really connected. One time my parents-in-law took, I'm not quite sure why they thought of that strategy, but it was worked out well. They took them to Crown Heights for Simchas Torah. Now, you know, Crown Heights looked like a Simchas Torah. I'd be scared to bring someone there for the first time. Anyway, And my father was sitting with him, and like a horse of Kastari, he was saying, except for the time the Rebbe was Fabreying, of course, especially Shmini Atzeres, he had a big Fabreying of my father in the Sukkah, which he used to do often. He loved Shmini Atzeres. And he took a lot of mashke, he took a lot of l'chaim. And the whole day he was talking to this guy, a poor guy, and he was explaining things, and he always came to the same conclusion in his heavy Israeli accent, which you never lost. And he said, "Mr. Mandel, you need to know, this world is nothing." And I was the whole time reading it. "This world is nothing. Oh, what are you running after a world? You know, like, it's just nothing, that's it. It's only one thing, that's Eibush the Torah Mitzvah." Eventually we came from, it's from kids to everything. I guess he saw that he meant it, I suppose, right? It was good. "This world is nothing." Okay, so he says like this. What it says, Alter Rebbe says, what does that mean? Hashem is alone. Hashem is one, completely one. The only true existence. Low, higher worlds, lower worlds. It's just like he was before the 6 days of creation. The even the place where we see the earth. This where we see the world now. Before the world was created, was only the presence of Hashem. And it's the same thing now. Hashem has not changed one bit. The world didn't affect him. The creation didn't affect him. When we create something really big, it affects us. We're different, right? If we accomplish something big, which we perceive to be big, we're not the same before and after, right? Hashem is exactly the same. Hasn't changed. Why? Because all the creations, everything that's created, betelim etzlay, they are completely bottled to Hashem. B'metzius mamish, they're completely bottled to Hashem. Now, what does it mean, completely bottled to Hashem? The word bittul is a very big word, right? Because an outcome of this oneness of Hashem is that the world doesn't really truly exist as independent existence, right? So how does it? So what does it mean? So what is it then? It doesn't exist, so what is it? I mean, there's a table here, right? Okay, so we gave the moshe before. It's an existing world, it exists, but it's not an existing world. So what is it? It exists in a place. The true existence of the world is that it's not separate from Hashem. It's completely bottled to Hashem. And he gives two analogies to understand this. I'll just say them outside because I want to make it clear. And then next week we'll go to understand why this brings simcha. Okay? Because again, the world still exists. I'll give you two mashalim. One is, Alter Rebbe quotes two things. One is something that he brought before in chapter 20 and 21. 21 mainly. And then the other, actually 20 but also. And then the other one is what he brings later in Shari Yichud V'Emunah, right? One is more of a spiritual sort of analogy, one is more of a physical analogy. But they bring out the same point. So, Hashem created the world through speech, right? Yeah. So let's talk about, at least the best we can understand, our speech, right? So someone says something, right? You say a word, you say a sentence. How do you compare that sentence to the potential to speak, right? In other words, that one sentence, compare it to the things that I could say in my entire life, that sentence is like completely insignificant, right? So in chapter 20, he starts off like that. He's saying, that's how the world is. But he says, no, it goes more than that. So now take, okay, so that's one sentence that I say compared to everything that I can say. So it might be a very impactful sentence, but in comparison, in context of everything that I could say and talk about, it's insignificant. But it's more than that. Because then the power of a speech is the last thing that we have. Right? The power of speech compared to the power of thought is even more insignificant. Right? The power of thought compared to our remote, because like this, the way it works is like this. Explains. I'm trying to make this brief but clear. So the way it explains there is like this. A person has five things. When we talk about speech, right? You have an idea, seichel. Yeah. You have midas, emotions. Then you have three ways of expressing that, which is thought, speech and action. Now, by the way, thought is an misunderstood thing sometimes. Thought is not the intellect. Thought is different to intellect. Okay? It's a very hard to understand. It's almost inseparable. So let me just try and understand, explain this. When you... I'll tell you a little bit how you can understand it, right? Let's say you suddenly come up with a light bulb idea, right? In that initial second, moment, fleeting second, like you got it, you didn't actually get it in any words, in any... It wasn't expressed, it just, you got it. It was pure intellect, right? Then if you start thinking, you'll think about it. And of course, when you think about it, you use language, right? What's the proof of this? Because two people can come up with exactly the same light bulb idea, and they speak different languages. Nothing to do with language. In the very beginning, it's pure intellect. Intellect doesn't speak in any language, it speaks in intellect. Then, of course, the only way you can express it, even to yourself, is through language, right? Same thing with emotion, by the way. I'll give you an example. Sorry? That's thought. Thought is a way of expressing something, but to yourself, within yourself. That's why it's so high, and it's inseparable a bit, because you're always thinking, right? Speech is different. Speech is already much lower. Speech is how I dilute the idea in order to communicate it to someone else, right? Sorry, we start off with the deep stuff today. Right? Same thing with midas, by the way. Emotion is the same thing, right? Let's say something happens and, like, you have a surge of anger or surge of pain, whatever, right? Initially, it's not expressed in any language. It's just an emotion. Very quickly, it evolves, obviously, because everything that you feel, you're going to have to express to yourself. So it evolves into words, right? So, seichel is higher than midas. Intellect is higher than emotion. Emotion is higher than thought. Thought is higher than, because thought's just an expression, it's not a thing itself. Thought is higher than, is higher than speech, right? So, compare speech to thought, it's... And then compare one thing that you said to the whole of the potential speaking, and then the speaking to the thought, the sport to the midas, and the midas to the seichel, it's pretty insignificant. So that's one idea. That's one idea that Al-Tareba says there, how the whole world is like insignificant. But it's more than that. Even though we said there's no thought, so even though we said there's no words in seichel, there's no open words, but the potential to express it exists there, okay? Al-Tareba has a thing that if something comes from something, it exists within that thing also. We'll see in the second mashal, right? So therefore, really, that nothing speech that you just said actually exists in the world of intellect, but exists in a complete way of bittul. It exists as part of it, but you wouldn't be able to identify it as something separate. It exists as part of the intellect. I'll give you a mashal that Rebbe brings somewhere, I think, so you can understand what I mean. If I remember correctly, this is how it goes. Two people come for litigation. They come for a din Torah, right? Ever gave this to you before? Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It's about $500. Reuven says Shimon owes him $500, etc. Okay. So Shimon is expecting not to have to pay the $500. Reuven is expected to pay $100. Okay. And there's a din Torah, and there's Dayanim sitting there. And they're looking up in Shulchan Aruch what the halacha is, right? Thinking, is it chayiv, is it zakai? The guy owes the money, doesn't owe the money, right? That's what they're talking about. And eventually they have to give a psak din. They have to give a halachic ruling, right? And they deliberate, and they talk about it, and they go into the sources, and they look at the Gemara, the Rishonim, and the Paskim, and halacha of Shulchan Aruch. And eventually come down to a psak. Psak is that Shimon owes Reuven the $500. Now, Reuven is very, very happy because he's getting $500. Shimon is very, very upset because he's losing $500, right? So in Reuven and Shimon's world, what's the $500? It's money. It's real money. It's money you lose, which is very painful, or it's money you gain, which is very, makes a very a big celebration, right? That same $500 in the Dayanim's world, in the rabbi's world, it's also the same $500, but it's not. That $500 is just a part of the din Torah. It's a part of the psak. It's part of Torah. That's what all it is. It's part of the halacha that has to be issued. Is that? So that's a mashal that something can exist within something else, but it's indiscernible. In the world of the Dayanim, the $500 also exists, but not as $500. It exists as an expression of the psak halacha, the ruling of the halacha. Okay. So this goes into also what Alter Rebbe says later. The same thing. The speech that comes out, the word I said, actually exists even in my intellect, but not as a separate thing. It exists as part of what what the intellect can do and come up with an amazing idea. And eventually the intellect can evolve also into thought and in speech. That's how it exists there, but exists as part of the intellectual thing. Same thing Alter Rebbe says in Shari Yichud Emunah, which is more of a tangible notion, more easy to understand. Alter Rebbe has this amazing thing. He says how the world is really bottled to Hashem. What does it mean? It means it doesn't exist. It does exist, but in a different way, in truth, right? Because he says like this, if you compare the rays of the sun to the sun, right? One of the ways Exodus talks about how the world never affected Hashem, because the way the world Hashem created the world, it's like the rays of the sun. The rays of the sun, it's there, it's not there, it won't affect the sun at all, right? Same thing with the world, it's here, it's not there, it doesn't affect Hashem altogether. So we just like the rays of the sun. But he says, not like the rays of the sun, the way they come out of the sun. The way the rays of the sun, the way they're inside the sun. Because the Alter Rebbe says that there's a rule. The rule is like this. If rays can come out of the sun, it means that rays exist within the sun. Now, if you dug into the sun, will you see rays? No, of course not. Right? In fact, light is something that emanates from something. The thing itself is not light. The thing is a source of light. In fact, I think even scientifically, I think that the sun is actually very dark, if I'm not mistaken. It's very black or something. I don't know what it is exactly. If the rays comes out of the sun, right? So what's the difference? The difference is that the rays in the sun, the rays exist in the sun, right? But they exist like the $500 exist in the Psak Halacha. In other words, the rays in the sun, it's a part of the perfection of the sun. In other words, it's a part of the sun. What is the sun? The sun is not light. The sun is not rays. It includes the potential to send rays. So the rays, the way they are in the sun, is just a part of the sun structure. Same thing with the world. In truth, the world doesn't really exist in this. Kula kamei kalachosh says this. It's like nothing for Hashem. It's completely bottled to Hashem. How? It exists within Hashem's world, but not as an independent existence. It has no independent significance. The world exists within Hashem's existence like the $500 exists in the Psak Halacha. In other words, Hashem, like the expression of Chassidus, the definition of Hashem is not a creator of worlds. That's not what Hashem is. Hashem is undefined. That's what it is. However, we know that part of the shleimus, part of the perfection, part of the completeness of Hashem is that he can also create a world. So the world exists within him, but as part of him. We don't see that. We see the world as, even if we come to the conclusion the world is insignificant, we see it as the rays outside of the sun. But really we're not. We're completely non-independent. We're not significant in our own right as an independent creation. Because we actually exist completely, we actually bottled Hashem completely, we're just a part of Hashem's existence. Right?
So can you say that you can compare Seichel to Mamale, Kolamim?
No, the Seichel you bring here was just before I gave him Seichel because of the brain. No, this somebody I just used as a muscle for something can exist in something but not as a separate part.
Yeah.
So that Dibur exists in Seichel. Nothing to do with Sovereign Malach alone. Let's talk about the Bittl. It's an analogy for the Bittl of the world, right? Okay. So this is in a very big summary, the concept of the oneness of Hashem. The point of bringing it here in Al-Tanya, because Al-Tanya wants to give us another pathway to true Simcha. Right? And next week we'll learn how the Al-Tanya explains that through understanding and internalizing this idea, actually it brings the biggest Simcha. And we'll have to leave that for next week. Stay tuned. Sorry?
The chaos. Does that precede the utterances?
Yeah, no, the ten actions were there because the ten actions go, they really correspond to the ten spheres. Right?